into choirs on the radio sometimes, and this one sounded just as good. They sang Rock of Ages and Stand By Me. There were young girls among the singers. Some of them didn't look any older than me. I sat there listening to them and hoping Mama would change her membership to hear. Then I could sing in the choir too, I thought. Yes, I am going to join this church. I don't like Mount Pleasant anyway. When the choir finished the songs, one of the deacons announced the amount taken up for the sick. Then Reverend Polk, who had been sitting in the pulpit in the big, comfortable pastor's chair with two deacons at his side, rose to his feet. He raised his hands and everybody stood. The choir then sang Sweet Jesus, joined by the congregation. When the song was over, Reverend Polk stepped up to the lectern that contained a big open Bible. That Bible was the biggest I had ever seen. Reverend Polk was a middle-aged minister with snow-white hair. I didn't understand his hair being that white. The only other person I had seen with hair that white was Miss Ola. Her hair was white because she was very old, but Reverend Polk didn't look half as old as she was. As soon as he opened his mouth, the women in the church started fainting, shouting, hollering, and carrying on. One large lady jumped straight up out of her seat and fell out stiff as a stick. It took about five deacons to carry her outside. It seemed as though almost every woman in the church was crying. I looked over at Miss Pearl them again and saw tears in the corner of Miss Pearl's eyes. She should cry, I thought. She shouldn't even be in church, and she doesn't even speak to Mama, and she lives right next door to her. I looked at Mama now, and she wasn't crying, but she looked like she would any minute. I didn't understand why all these women were crying. I hadn't heard a word Reverend Polk had said. He looked as though he was mouthing a sermon for a movie or something, and the soundtrack wasn't working. Once or twice he raised his hands, and the women hollered even louder. They went on hollering at least 15 minutes after he stopped working his mouth and sat down. So then I knew they weren't crying because of anything he said. They are all probably crying because they are doing somebody wrong, I thought. Maybe they don't speak to their neighbors, just like Miss Pearl, and she is crying. They must have done something bad, and they think God is going to slap the breath out of them while they are in church. Within an hour or so, we were out of church, and this was another thing I liked about Centerville Baptist. Mount Pleasant and the other country churches I had attended held services that lasted all day. They also kept taking up collections in the country, and here at Centerville Baptist, they took up collection only twice. As usual, when church was out, a lot of people stood on the church grounds, talking for a while. I felt so funny standing there. It seemed as though everyone had someone to talk to but us. Mama, Adeline, Junior, and I stood near the car all by ourselves. I noticed that Miss Pearl and Betty them seemed to be popular with the other church members. As Mama stood looking at them, she had tears in her eyes. She had hoped that they would at least speak to her, but they pretended they didn't even see us. Their car was parked right next to ours. They got in and drove off without even looking in our direction. Raymond had been talking with Betty's husband and one of the deacons. Now he came to our car and we left. "How do y'all like Reverend Polk?" he said to no one in particular, since he realized Mama was in no mood for conversation. "Why is his hair that white?" I asked. "It's been like that ever since he got out of prison," Raymond said. "Prison? A preacher? What did he do?" "He killed a man. Then, when he was in prison, he worried so his hair turned white. He was called to preach while in prison." "The Bible say, thou shall not kill. How can he kill a man and preach what the Bible say to people?" I asked Raymond. "Why you gotta know everything? Always asking questions all the time." Mama said to me. I could tell she was real mad, so I hushed. I didn't say anything else all the way home, but that didn't stop me from thinking about Reverend Polk. He had killed a man, and all he had to do was raise his hand in church, and women fainted all over the place. It seemed to me at the time that we were going to church to listen to a killer preach the gospel of Christ. Then you sit next to your neighbors and playmates, and they don't even speak to you. This didn't seem like church at all. Not the way of Christ, anyway. Not the Christ Mama was always telling us all those good things about. Mama never did go back to Centerville Baptist again, but Adeline, Junior, and I went back the very next Sunday and every Sunday after that. It seemed as though Mama had completely resigned herself to not being accepted, yet she was determined to make Raymond's people accept us, even in their church. Every Sunday now she made us study our Sunday school lesson just as hard as our regular homework for school each day. Within a month or so, we were not only going to Sunday school, but to the 11 o'clock church services and BTU, Baptist Training Union. Later on, Mama was not satisfied with us just going to Centerville Baptist, but now at every church-celebrated holiday, we had to say speeches or participate in every program offered for children and teenagers. It wasn't always we that took part in the programs, but it was always me. Mama gave up on Adeline and Junior in the church, too. They were worse in church than in school. They were always given speeches, but they never did learn them in time to say them. Within a few days after I received mine, I would know it by heart, and when I said it on the program, unlike most of the other participants, I didn't forget a word or stumble. While we were doing all this at Centerville Baptist and winning the approval of all the church members there, Mama decided to go back to Mount Pleasant. Raymond really wanted her to join Centerville Baptist, but Mama just couldn't bring herself to sit up in the same church with Miss Pearl then. When they argued about it, she would say, "You think I'm going to join church with them hypocrites? Just 'cause you belong over there? Shit, they don't even speak to me. Why should I go over there and give 'em something to talk about? Be sitting up there looking at me, rolling their eyes and hunching and whispering to each other, make me so mad I can't even think about what the preacher's saying." Raymond had no defense against what Mama said about Miss Pearl then, so he'd just say, "You go on. You join church where you want to join. Go on. If you will be happier out there at Mount Pleasant, then go back out there." Even though Mama kept hinting that she was going back to Mount Pleasant, months and months passed, and she still didn't go. I understood her feelings about Miss Pearl then, but I still wanted her to join Centerville Baptist. Since we were living in Centerville, and Adeline, Junior, and I were going to church and Sunday school there, I thought it was crazy for Mama to go all the way back to the country to attend church. She should have gone back to Centerville Baptist in spite of Miss Pearl them, instead of running to Mount Pleasant and letting them know that they were getting next to her. Besides, I had gotten to the place I was really enjoying Centerville Baptist, for there, at Darlene's own church, I was outdoing her. Sometimes I would come in from Sunday school, raving about how well I had explained the lesson, and Mama wouldn't say anything. She would just look at me. I got the feeling that she wanted me to outdo Darlene, but she still didn't want me to enjoy Centerville Baptist too much. From the way she was acting, I could tell that she wanted Adeline, Junior, and me to go back to Mount Pleasant with her. So whenever I said something nice about Centerville Baptist, she would say something nicer about Mount Pleasant. Finally, that August, Mama resumed her church activities at Mount Pleasant. By this time, I was so involved in Centerville Baptist that I had made up my mind that I definitely would not join her church no matter what. So when Mama told us to get ready to go to Mount Pleasant one Sunday morning, I didn't say a word.
Since she had told me that we'd go out to Aunt Cindy's after church and had got me thinking of all the fun we had always had playing in the woods out there, I figured it would be worth it even if I had to sit up in church half the day.
Besides, I thought, she can't make me join church out there. As Raymond drove up to Mount Pleasant, I saw that just as I expected, things hadn't changed much. It was a gloomy day, and the graveyard looked just like it did when I used to sit up in school and count the tombstones. Automatically, my eyes were drawn from the tombstones to that little, raggedy school building. The cracks in the wood seemed even larger now, and the whole school looked like it was about to collapse. I was sure it was no longer used, but as Raymond parked the car in front of the church, I saw through the open door that they still had Sunday school for the smaller children there. Mama, Adeline, Jr., and I got out of the car. As I watched Raymond drive off with Jenny Ann in his lap and James on the seat beside him, I was more aware than ever that we were two families living under the same roof. We went inside the church and sat on the back seats. Sunday school classes for teenagers and adults were being conducted up front. I watched the teenager class for a while and noticed that none of them said anything. Their minds seemed to be far away. The old lady who was teaching them kept mumbling the lesson as if she was talking to herself. "And Mama want me to come to Sunday school out here," I thought, remembering our lively discussions at Centerville Baptist. In a little while, Sunday school ended, and the church began to fill up with adults. Mama knew nearly everybody who walked in. She smiled and waved like she had come from a long vacation or something. When the adults were all seated, church started. The new minister, Reverend Tyson, was short, dark, and soft-spoken, just the opposite of Reverend Kaysen. He gave a brief sermon and then talked about revival, which would be starting in a week. The look Mama gave me when he mentioned revival made me suspicious of why she came back to church the month before baptism. As soon as the sermon was over, came the first collection. I sat through two collections, but when they started a third, I decided it was time for me to take a break. Since Reverend Tyson's sermons was only about 20 minutes long, I had thought that Mount Pleasant had gotten modern, like Centerville Baptist, and would let us out early. Now I saw that I was wrong, so I went out back of the church to the same old toilet I used to escape to when I was in school there. I discovered that some of the carvings I had made of Reverend Kaysen over 6 years ago were still on the walls. On my way back, I met one of Aunt Cindy's daughters, and we stayed outside talking for 2 hours or so, standing under the oak tree near the toilet. When I thought they were almost through taking up collections, I went back inside the church. As I entered, Deacon Brown was just beginning still another collection, this time for the sick and invalid. I stood in the back of the church, trying to decide whether to stay or not. "Sisters and brothers, we've heard the good minister preach here today," Deacon Brown was shouting. "And it was a good sermon, wasn't it?" "Yes, sure was. Thank the Lord," several old sisters answered. "Well, now, we should be glad and thankful to the Lord that we're able to come out and hear Brother Tyson today." "Yes, Lord, yes, Lord. And you all know that we're much more fortunate than those brothers and sisters of ours who are lying in their beds sick today." "Yes, Lord. And you all know of our beloved Sister Turner, who's been on her sick bed for many, many months now." "Yes. Let us dig into our pockets and show Sister Turner that we're thinking of her. I'm gonna start this collection with a dollar. I want all y'all out there to match this dollar. Come on now, let's show Sister Turner how we feel about her."
Here's my dollar, brother,
someone called.
And mine, 50 cents over here.
In a few minutes, Deacon Brown had raised about $12. Now he was calling for $15. When he got $15.36, he tried to make it $20. Just as I was leaving to go back outside, I saw Mama having a serious conversation with old Sister Jones, who was now sitting beside her. I knew that she was trying to get Mama to get me to join Mount Pleasant. Usually during revival season, older sisters of the church recruited candidates for baptism, and Sister Jones always outdid the others. During revival, she went from house to house, hopping on her stick, trying to get members with unbaptized teenagers to have them join the church. A lot of parents got their children to join by telling them that Sister Jones would put the bad mouth on them if they didn't. Now there was Mama nodding her head to everything Sister Jones was saying. I just bet Mama's gonna tell me Sister Jones say I ought to join church, I thought. Well, I'm not. I ain't scared of that old witch. I'm going to join Centerville Baptist. I went back outside, trying to convince myself that Sister Jones didn't have any power to put a bad mouth on people. I was walking back toward the big tree over by the toilet. As I came up to it, I felt sick. I told myself that it was only hunger. I didn't want to believe that I was scared. About 4:30, church finally let out. Unlike Centerville Baptist, Mama had lots of friends to talk to here. She had been born in the Mount Pleasant vicinity and had been a member of Mount Pleasant Church since she was 14. She had attended church regularly until we moved to Centerville. She belongs here, I thought to myself, and rightfully so, but not me. Before Raymond came, Mama pointed out about 50 people who she said were our cousins or something. It seemed like just about everybody out there was kin to us one way or another. I knew she was introducing me to all of them to try and make me feel like I belonged out there, too. But I didn't know anybody but Aunt Cindy them, and I didn't want to know the rest. All that following week leading up to revival, I tried to avoid Mama. Every time I came within hearing distance, she'd start nagging me to join Mount Pleasant. To get out of her way, I went to pick cotton for one of the neighboring farmers, but she always managed to corner me somehow. Look a there, walking round here poking your mouth out. Can't nobody say nothing to you. You better go join church, Mama would scold. I'm going to join church, but I'm not going to join Mount Pleasant. Shoot, why should we go out there? We go to Centerville Baptist every Sunday. We go to Sunday school, church, and everything. Why don't you change your membership? I said angrily. Don't you tell me where to join church. When you expect to join Centerville Baptist? They don't baptize till way next year. You'll be 13 years old next month. I ain't responsible for your sins after you reach 12. Sister Jones was just telling me about some girl who... Sister Jones? What's she got to do with this? She's always trying to run everybody's life. Don't you sass that old woman. God will put a curse on you this minute. When Mama saw that her nagging didn't help, she stopped. Revival started Monday of the following week, and every day I expected her to try and get me to go. When Wednesday passed, and she still didn't say anything about going, I was sure she had given up. Next day, Thursday, I walked around the house singing and beaming in the thought that I had beat her down. For the first time in days, I sat at the same table with her. Ray, I want you to drive us out to revival tomorrow night, Mama said casually. Reverend Bridge gonna preach out there. So that's why she cooked all this good food, I thought. Who is Reverend Bridge? I asked, thinking he must be someone like Sister Jones. You heard about that minister who everybody go hear preach those sermons about dry bones and the eagle stirred his nest?
He's the best preacher they got around. Oh, that's Reverend Bridge? I didn't know they were going to have him at Mount Pleasant. I sat there and thought for a while. I knew Mama was just trying to impress me that such famous ministers came to Mount Pleasant so that I would be tempted to go to revival. I was tempted, too. I was really curious about the famous Reverend Bridge. Besides, I thought, it's the last night of revival, and nobody can make me join. The following evening, Raymond drove me, Mama, and Adeline out to Mount Pleasant. He left us as usual, saying he would pick us up after church. When we walked inside, I saw that the place was full, but I was surprised that it wasn't overflowing since Reverend Bridge was going to be there. We sat in the center pews. As the service began, I asked Mama where was Reverend Bridge. "I heard somebody say he ain't coming to preach tonight," she said, trying to look disappointed. "He ain't coming?" I said, frowning. "Who told you he ain't coming?" "What's the difference who told me? Stop asking so many questions all the time. Always gotta know everything. Shut up now. Church is starting." I was so mad with Mama. I sat through the prayers and testimonies without hearing one word that was said. When Reverend Tyson got up to speak, I thought, come all the way out here to hear this dull-assed sermon. Listen to this. Listen to this. I mumbled to myself as he began in his usual soft, sweet tones. "Tonight, brothers and sisters, since it's the last night of revival, and I know that there are still many of you sitting out there tonight who are undecided about serving Christ, we shall take as our text Matthew 4. I want y'all out there who's been tempted by the devil to stay out of the church, to take a good look at what Christ our Lord went through, and remember his courage and strength in the face of great temptation." He opened his Bible very slowly, cleared his throat slightly, and began to read. "Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit unto the wilderness, to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, brothers and sisters, 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterwards mighty hungry. And when the devil came to him, he said, If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made of bread. But he answered, and listen, listen. And he said, Yes, yes, what did he say? It is written, Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Do you hear that, sisters and brothers? He shouted. Yes! We don't need them fine cars. We don't need them fancy clothes. Yes, Jesus! Yes, Lord! Yes! Amen! The crowd roared and hollered. I sat there thinking, who in here got fine cars and fancy clothes? He let them holler and amen and shout for a while. Then he said, If you think that was courage, listen to this, he said, mopping his face with his handkerchief. Then the devil taketh Jesus up unto the holy city, and set him on the top of the highest temple. And he said to him, to Christ himself, If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is said that his angels watch over thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. And Jesus said unto him, Listen what he said, children. It is written, that thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God, and the devil not given up, Reverend Tyson said, closing his Bible, took Jesus up to the highest mountain this time and showed him all the kingdoms of the world below, all them big houses, all them fine cars, all them beautiful clothes, and said, if thou wilt fall down and worship me, all these things will I give unto thee. He shouted, standing on the edge of the pulpit, spit flying in every direction. And this time, Christ got a little angry, he said, coming down through the aisles. And Jesus said, get thee hence, Satan, he screamed, throwing out his arms and pointing his finger in my direction. Women were shouting and jumping and hollering and screaming all over the place. Deacons were running around grabbing fainting women and shouting, Amen, at the right times. Get thee hence, Satan, he said again. For it is written that thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. He paused for a while, breathing deeply, and it seemed like everybody in the church was about to faint. Then the devil left Jesus, and the angels came and ministered unto him, he said, almost whispering, as everyone in the church leaned forward to catch his words. Suddenly, he raised his arms. He fought away the devil, he shouted, going down on his knees. He fought away temptation, he said, getting up, and God's angels came to him. He walked past our row, and as I turned to watch him, my eyes met Sister Jones. I couldn't take my eyes from her sunken-eyed, wrinkled face. Aren't you ready to give up the devil and come to Christ tonight? Reverend Tyson shouted. Who's going to come? Who's ready? Do we have anybody tonight? Do we have anybody tonight? Will you come? Will you come? He pleaded. As he did, Sister Jones started singing, and all the other sisters joined her. I turned around and looked at Mama, and she had tears running out of her eyes. Even Adeline looked like she was about to cry. Come to Jesus! Come to Jesus! Come to Jesus right now! They all sang. He will save you! Reverend Tyson sang as he walked back toward the pulpit. He will save you. He will save you. He will save you right now. The whole church sang. Reverend Tyson reached the pulpit and turned to the audience. Will everybody stand? He said, motioning with his arms. Everybody stood, continuing to sing, Come to Jesus. Out of all the voices, Sister Jones was the only one I heard. All the Christians, I want you to sit down. Reverend Tyson shouted over the singing voices. And all the sinners, I want you to remain standing. Now don't you lie to the Lord. People started sitting down. If you are a sinner, repent tonight. Stand up and let me see who you are. Come to Jesus. Come to Jesus. Come to Jesus right now. It seemed like I was floating in the air and I had lost sight of where I was. Something was behind me, pushing me. All I could hear was Sister Jones singing and Reverend Tyson saying, Will you come? Will you come tonight? I could feel myself moving, and I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. I didn't see anybody. When everything was quiet and the singing had stopped,
I looked around and saw that I was standing right in the front row of the church at the mourner's bench with a few other candidates for baptism. I was standing face to face with Reverend Tyson.
"What's your name, young lady?"
he asked gently.
"Essie Mae Moody,"
I stuttered.
"Speak up, young lady. Tell the Lord your name."
"Essie Mae Moody," I said, a little bit louder.
"You want to become a member of this church, Sister Moody?"
he asked. I didn't say yes. I just nodded my head.
"Brothers," he said solemnly, "do we accept Sister Moody as a candidate for baptism to become a member of this church?"
"Brother Pastor," said Deacon Brown, standing near us, "we accept Sister Moody as a candidate to be baptized into Mount Pleasant Church on the second Sunday of next month."
When Reverend Tyson finished with the last candidate, he motioned us to return to our seats. I hesitated. I didn't want to go back there to face Mama. When I realized that I was standing there by myself, I turned around and walked slowly back. As I came up to Mama, I didn't even look at her. I just stumbled into the row and sat down. Adeline leaned over and said in a loud whisper,
"You join church!"
Then I looked at Mama. When she smiled at me, I felt like killing her and Sister Jones both. During the next few weeks, I hardly spoke to Mama at all. Since I had threatened to run away before baptism, I didn't have to avoid her. She was avoiding me. She was so pleased that I had joined Mount Pleasant that she was scared to say anything that would make me mad enough to really run off. Baptism at Mount Pleasant was the biggest event of the year. Some people saved all year to buy a new outfit. Mama got busy planning what we both would wear. She went to the one store in Centerville that gave credit to Negroes and got a gray fall suit and a pair of shoes for herself. The candidates for baptism had to wear all white, so Mama had a white dress made for me and bought me a blue one for after baptism. When she said that the white dress symbolized that I was entering the church pure, and the blue one meant that I would always be true and faithful to the church, I felt more than ever like running away. Saturday, the day before baptism, it rained. I had hoped it would flood so that baptism would be called off, but it didn't rain that hard. On Sunday morning, baptism day, I got up and the rain had stopped. I was the last one up. Everybody else had eaten breakfast, dressed, and everything. When I saw that Mama had laid my baptism clothes out at the foot of my bed, I sat there thinking of jumping out of the window and disappearing forever. Instead, I looked at that white dress, those white socks, that white slip, and those white drawers and thought, "This shit means I've been washed clean of all my sins." "My sins," I said, kicking everything off onto the floor like a wild woman. Just then, Mama came in.
"Gal, look a here what you done. Getting this white dress all dirty. Get out of that bed,"
she screamed angrily, picking up the dress like I had wounded it.
"How you expect to be baptized laying up in the bed poking your mouth out, kicking these clothes on the floor? God'll slap the breath out of you playing with him like this. Get up! Take a bath and get these clothes on. It's 9:30 and I gotta get you out there for 11 o'clock,"
she continued, hollering all the way to the kitchen.
"Can't do nothing with these hard-head chaps."
Getting out of bed, I looked at those white things again and thought, "Washed clean." I threw off my pajamas and pulled on the drawers.
"Washed clean," I said,
putting on the slip.
"Washed clean," I said louder, pulling on the socks.
"Washed clean," I yelled,
pulling the dress over my head.
"Get out of them clothes and take a bath!"
Mama yelled and pushed me onto the bed, just as I was putting my arms through the sleeves of the dress, which was still over my head. As I hit the bed, I heard a loud rip.
"Look a there! Look a there done tore that damn dress! Gal, I could kill your ass! Get on in there and take a bath while I sew this dress up! God damn you!"
she yelled, pushing me out of the room. Finally, I put that white dress on, and we were on our way out to Mount Pleasant. Everyone had left the church for the pond except the dozen or so candidates who were waiting for me. I was almost an hour late. A couple of deacons used their cars to drive us to the pond. As we drove past the pond, where they usually had baptism, and turned into the old gravel road I had walked so many times on my way to school, I asked Deacon Brown which pond we were going to.
"They just build a new pond out there right in front of Miss Rose's den. That's a better setup 'cause it'll be easier for y'all to change clothes at Miss Rose's house."
Deacon Brown parked the car in front of Miss Rose's, saying,
"Oh, they're all out there, huh? Pretty big day today."
Getting out of the car, I looked down the hill and saw hundreds of people standing around near the levee of a big new pond. Opposite the levee, on the far side of the pond, stood a whole group of cows. They looked like they were part of the service. We walked through the gate and headed toward the pond. I felt the dampness of the ground from yesterday's rain. It was a gloomy and chilly September morning, and it looked as if it was going to rain again. As I got closer to the crowd, they looked to me like they were huddling together to keep each other warm. Looking at them made me even colder. The girls were shivering in their gaily colored nylon dresses. The young boys stood motionless in their thin suits, with their hands in their pockets. Even the old ladies were too cold to talk. I spotted Mama in the crowd in her new fall suit and thought, at least she knew how to dress. When we got to the edge of the pond where Reverend Tyson was standing with two deacons, we were told to line up. I looked over at the crowd and saw that they had spread out so everyone could see better. There were a lot more people than I had thought. Seeing all those brightly colored dresses and hats, the long earrings, beads, and fancy hairdos, the blood-red lipstick laid on so thick that on some lips it looked purple, made me even more aware that we were all dressed in white, even the boys. I felt like a stuffed white rabbit in an Easter parade. Now that we were all lined up, we were asked to slip our shoes off. Then Reverend Tyson was led out into the water by two deacons. Just as they stepped into the water, I heard Sister Jones's voice sing out, loud and clear, "Take me to the waters." She was immediately joined by everyone else standing around the pond.
"Take me to the waters. Take me to the waters to be baptized."
As the people caught their breaths for the next verse, several moos could be heard. The mooing got so loud that the singing stopped for a moment. Reverend Tyson, in water up to his knees, turned toward the cows and raised his hand as if to quiet them. When they stopped mooing, everybody laughed. Then the singing began again. When Reverend Tyson and the two deacons were standing in water up to their chests, the first candidate was led out. Everyone continued to sing, "Take Me to the Waters," but much lower. Most of the candidates looked scared, especially the girl in front of me. I couldn't tell whether she was shaking because she was scared or cold, or both. I heard Jack, one of the wildest, crap-shootin'est boys around, whisper from behind me,
"Look it, all that cow shit in that water."
I looked down at the water and saw big piles of cow manure floating around. The thought of being ducked under that water made me want to vomit. The water was so muddy, the whole pond looked like a giant mud pie. Then I looked at the girl standing between Reverend Tyson and one of the deacons.
I baptize you in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Reverend Tyson said, drawing out the last syllable as he ducked her quickly under the water. She came up coughing and sputtering. Her white dress was now dark brown. Her hair was dripping with mud. All the other candidates stared at her as the deacons helped her back to the edge of the pond. She was shaking, and she looked like she wanted to cry so bad. All the candidates were aware of the saying that if you coughed when you were being baptized, it meant the devil was coming out of you. I knew she was embarrassed because she had coughed.
All dressed in white, washed clean. Look at that, I thought, looking at her.
As the girl ahead of me was being led out, Jack leaned close and whispered,
"'Member Moody, better not cough out there. Sister Jones gonna say you were a sinner.
You got a lot more to cough about than me, I said.
I saw two deacons coming for me. As I waded into the water, I could feel the mud sticking to my legs. I was mad as hell, and I heard Sister Jones's voice singing, "Nothing but the righteous," along with the rest. I thought, nothing but the righteous? Some shit. I was so mad I barely heard Reverend Tyson shouting,
I baptize you in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Suddenly, a wet hand was slapped over my face, and I felt the mud folding over me, sucking me down. Just as I began to feel the heaviness of the mud, I was lifted out of the water. I tried to open my eyes, but mud was stuck to my lashes, so I just left them closed. I felt shitty all over. As they were leading me out of the water, I could hear the cows mooing, Jack laughing, and everyone singing, "Take me to the waters." Everything sounded far away. It took me a minute to realize that my ears were stuffed full of mud. After the last candidate was baptized, we were all rushed up to Miss Rose's, where we washed off and changed. Even then, I still smelt like wet mud, and the smell lingered for weeks. Chapter 6. All that second winter in the new house, Raymond sat around talking about becoming a big-time farmer, raising lots of kids, making plenty of money, and being his own man. So in early March, he went out scouting for a mule and a piece of land. Within a week, he had found both, as cheap as he could get them. He bought a used-up old mule from a friend for $25, hoping that it could last at least one season. He rented a strip of cheap virgin land in the old army camp area. It was on a hill, slanting down to the edge of some woods. Since there was only one little tree and not much grass, Raymond thought that plowing would be easy and that he had gotten a real bargain. For the first few days of plowing, he went around grinning and boasting and even saying how nice Mr. Pickett was for letting him have the land so cheap. He enjoyed the plowing, and he stayed in the field from sunup to sundown. He'd come in all sweaty and tired, dragging the poor old mule behind him. One evening he came in a little early, all disgusted, cursing up a storm. He slammed into the kitchen with his lunch basket held in front of him.
Look at this. Look at this. That goddamn motherfucker. I should have known he wasn't giving me that land for nothing. That whole damn bottom is just like plowing into steel. Look at this shit, he said, dumping the contents of his lunch bucket onto the table.
We all stood around the table looking. Mama picked up a big round rock covered with dirt.
What in the shit is this?
Mama asked, scraping the dirt from the rock.
Don't you drop that thing. It may be live, Raymond shouted.
Live?
Mama screamed, throwing up both hands, dropping the object to the floor. It hit with a loud thud and rolled under the stove. Raymond tiptoed after it with his arms out like he was reaching for a baby. He got down on his knees, reached under the stove, and carefully picked the thing up.
What you doing bringing stuff like that in this house? What you mean it's live?
Mama said, staring at the object in Raymond's trembling hands.
Live? Shit, this is a goddamn hand grenade. That whole bottom is full of them. Some of them look like they ain't never been touched. Hand grenade? You mean a bomb?
Mama said.
Sure. The bottom of that hill must have been a practice ground or something. Look a here, he said, picking up a big bullet. If that steel plow hit this thing the right way, it'd kill the shit out of me.
If them things been out there since the war, they ain't hardly no good now,
Mama said, looking at the pile of grenades and bullets on the table.
Take your hands off that stuff, boy,
she screamed at Junior, who was just about to pick up one of the grenades.
Ray, get that shit out of here.
From then on, Raymond plowed very carefully. Every time he went out to the fields after that, he would act as if it might be his last day on earth. Even though Mama insisted that the old bullets and things weren't live, she stopped fixing lunch for Raymond and had him come home at 12. And every evening, she'd pace around the kitchen, worrying until he got home. After a few days of plowing with no explosions, Raymond and Mama began to relax a little.
Next year, I won't have to plow through all that shit,
Raymond said to Mama.
Shit, next year, Mr. Pickett will plant his own damn cotton out there,
Mama said. School wasn't out yet, and I was still working for Mrs. Claiborne. She was teaching me so much, and she was so good to me that I didn't want to stop working for her. But I knew as soon as school was over, I'd have to work in the field all day. I was scared to death. I never could take much sun without getting a headache, and I had heard that a lot of people had died in the field from sunstroke and different things. One evening, I came in from work and saw Mama, Raymond, and all of them standing around out under the pecan tree. I walked up to them. The mule was stretched out on the ground with foam bubbling out of his mouth, and Raymond was cursing.
Why didn't that motherfucker die next week? Bring some water, Junior. Get that hose pipe and hook it up. Put some water in that tub. Goddamn, hurry up! This son of a bitch! Just got one more week of good plowing and this fucker gonna die now. Shit.
You're working him too hard, Ray. Why don't you take it easy? You ain't got but a little more plowing to do. You gotta give that mule some rest.
You don't plow no old mule that much. Besides, Jim them probably worked the hell out of this mule before you got him,
Mama said as Junior filled the tub up full of water.
That damn cotton gotta be planted, though. That ground's gotta be broke. Soon everybody else's cotton gonna be coming up,
Raymond shouted as he helped Junior drag the tub of water up to the mule. Then he grabbed the mule by the head and tried to make it drink from the tub, but its head was limp and its eyes were walling back. It looked like it didn't know where it was. When Raymond couldn't get it to drink any water, he slammed its head down on the ground some hard. I stood there feeling sorry for the poor old mule, but in the back of my mind I was saying,
I hope it die. I hope it die. I hope it die.
I went to bed that night praying that the mule would die, because I didn't want to quit working for Mrs. Claiborne to go out and get a sunstroke. But when I got up the next morning, that damn mule was up kicking and ready to go back to the field again. Raymond finally finished his plowing and eventually got the cotton planted. It needed lots of rain to take root, so every day Mama and Raymond went around praying for rain. They prayed and prayed, but the rain just didn't come. Raymond walked around grumbling and cursing and acting like he was mad with the whole world. Every day he would go out to look at the cotton. When he came in, he'd start shouting, "That ground so hard out there, the sun is cracking the ground up. Them damn cotton seed burning up in the ground. Fuck this shit. A man can't make a living. I don't care how hard he try. Everything's against him. Even the goddamn sun." And every time I'd hear Raymond cursing, I'd think, "Please burn up in the ground. Oh, please burn up in the ground." Mama would sit on the porch rocking all day, watching the sky. Every time a little cloud would get in the sky, she'd start hollering, "It's coming! It's coming! Look like we're gonna get some rain tonight!" So then I started praying that it wouldn't rain. Often I went to bed and had dreams that there were big floods and water was just gushing everywhere, washing away mountains and trees and all the cotton. But eventually it did rain and the cotton started to come up. Every other day or so, Raymond would take us out to see the cotton. He wouldn't take us into the field when the cotton was just coming out of the ground because he was superstitious. He thought we might interfere with the works of nature. So instead, he parked the car alongside the road, and we all sat looking out at the cotton field. "Boy, look at there, Too Sweet. It sure is growing," Raymond said, grinning like a wild man. I thought he had lost his mind. I couldn't see any cotton. All I saw was a big, empty field. School ended, and I sadly said goodbye to Mrs. Claiborne. Raymond had said that on Monday morning, my first week out of school, we would start chopping cotton. I was angry because I didn't expect to quit Mrs. Claiborne's until it was time to pick the cotton. I didn't even know anything about chopping. All I thought you had to do to cotton once it was up was pick it. That weekend, Mama and Raymond both prepared for the chopping. Mama went into town and bought a whole lot of food and a straw hat for each of us, and Raymond stocked up on hoes. All day Sunday, he sat out under the pecan tree sharpening the hoes. He called me and Adeline out and had us make believe we were hoeing so he could cut handles the right length for us. As I watched Adeline pretend to hoe, I thought, "Lord have mercy. Little Adeline hoeing." That night, as I went to bed, I thought of how hot it had been all day. I was sure the temperature was over 100 degrees. I knew that it would be just as hot the next day, and I could see myself standing out there sweating over a hoe. I fell asleep worrying about hoeing in that boiling hot sun, and I had a terrible dream. In my dream, a whole group of us were out in the cotton field, up on the hill where there was only that one tree that Raymond had left for shade. We were hoeing slowly down the hill when the sun came up so big that it seemed to fill up the whole sky. It came so close to us, it looked like a big mouth about to swallow us. The whole sky and everything around us was red. I was getting terribly hot, and great big drops of sweat were dripping all over me. I looked at that little tree that was up on the hill, and it was drying, bending, whizzling up to nothing. I looked around in the far distance, and the trees were on fire. The whole forest was burning. The trees were just flapping down. I looked around for everybody else in the cotton field, for Raymond and all of them, and they were all dead, lying between the rows. I was leaning on my hoe, and I was rocking, and the sun came down even closer. I was the last one standing, and I knew it was coming for me. I quickly glanced at all the dead bodies evaporating around me, and I felt myself crumbling under the heat of the sun. And then I woke up. When I got out of bed that morning, I was sweating and shaking like someone with palsy. I couldn't touch my breakfast. Mama kept asking me what was wrong, but I was too scared to tell her about the dream, so I just mumbled that I wasn't feeling well. I hoped that she would tell me to stay home, but instead she handed me a couple of aspirins and sent me off to the cotton field with the rest. Raymond took along Adeline, Alberta, and me for the chopping, and Junior and James as water boys. When Raymond stopped the car in front of Miss Pearl's, and Cherie and Darlene came running out in blue jeans, long-sleeved shirts, and straw hats, dressed just like we were, I was surprised. I didn't think Raymond could talk Miss Pearl into letting precious little Darlene and Cherie hold cotton. I guessed he must have told her that if he made it big from the cotton, he'd do something nice for her. When Cherie and Darlene got into the car, I forgot my dream for a while. But as Raymond drove up the hill to the cotton field, it all came back. I looked around at everybody in the car and thought to myself, we're all gonna die this morning. It was about 6:30 and the sun was not up yet, but I could tell from the pink clouds and brightening sky that it was on its way. Raymond drove up to the gate and stopped the car. When Junior jumped out to open the gate, I felt like jumping out too and running away. I had a feeling that if I went through that gate, I'd be trapped in the cotton field forever. But I couldn't move. It was just like the time Mama had killed a hog and we had eaten a whole lot of fresh hog meat. I had gone to sleep and awakened just before daylight. Then, too, I couldn't move. I felt the need to call for help, but I couldn't even open my mouth. I was calling and calling, but no words came out. I tried to wiggle my toe or move my arm, but I couldn't move anything. I couldn't even bat an eye. After a while, it passed away. When I told Mama about it, she said that I had eaten too much hog meat and that the witch was riding me. The witch was the evil in the hog meat that had stopped my blood from running. As Raymond drove through the gate, I sat there screaming for help, but I knew no sound came because nobody looked at me. When he parked the car under the little tree, right by the cotton field, and everybody got out, I was still sitting there screaming. I could hear Raymond calling me, but I couldn't even answer. At last, I saw him walking back to get me. "Gal, what's wrong with you? You act like you're losing your mind this morning," Raymond shouted. I jumped out of the car and ran right past him toward Alberta them, walking to the cotton field. For a moment, as Raymond shouted at me, I forgot my dream. Then suddenly, it struck me that we were about to start hoeing on that hill, and the whole dream came back. I stopped short and waited for Raymond. As he came up, I said, "Why don't we start hoeing in the bottom?" "You ain't got a bit of sense, huh, gal? Don't you know it's harder to come up a hill than to go down it? Now why should we start hoeing at the bottom of the hill and hoe uphill?" "It's cooler down there," I said meekly, looking up at the sky. He shook his head as if I was crazy and walked away. I followed reluctantly. Raymond and Alberta were the only ones who knew how to chop cotton, so they walked up and down the rows and showed us how to do it. The cotton was heavily planted. We had to thin it out so it would have enough earth and air to grow freely. Darlene and I caught on fast, and we were soon hoeing by ourselves. Raymond and Alberta lagged behind, helping Adeline and Cherie. I got all wrapped up in trying to out-hoe Darlene. I finished 3 or 4 rows quickly, way ahead of her. Every now and then I looked back to see how far she was behind me. When she was 1 whole row behind, I stopped to shake my arms out. I could feel the sweat running down under them. I was scared to look up at the sky because I knew the sun had come up. My heart began to beat like a loud drum. I shook all over. I could almost feel the sun rising in the sky. I stood there for a while, giving Darlene a chance to catch up with me. Then I hoed along slowly for a couple of hours, pretending that the sun didn't even exist.
Every now and then, James or Junior brought someone water. I didn't want to look at them because I knew it was getting hotter, and each trip they made reminded me of the sun. Along about 10:30 or 11, I could feel my shirt clinging to my body like a big, wet crab. I was soaked to my waist. I didn't look up, but I knew that sun was up there just like it had been in my dream. Water was running down my face from under my hat, and big drops of sweat were dripping off my arms. It was getting harder and harder for me to hoe. Every time I reached out to chop some cotton, the row seemed to move away from me, like a big wiggling snake. I looked around at everybody else in the field, and they were wiggling like the row in front of me. They looked like they were falling, just like in my dream. I didn't want to look at them. I looked up at the sun, and for a moment, I was completely blinded. Then I knew the others were dead. I could see the sun again. My eyes got fixed on it. I felt myself reeling and rocking on my hoe.
"Hey, Junior! Come over here, boy! Bring that water! This gal out here about to faint or something!"
Raymond yelled. Next thing I knew, I was sitting on the ground, and Raymond was trying to force me to drink some water. Everybody else had stopped hoeing, and now they were all standing around me. Raymond told me to rest a while under the little tree. Thinking about how that tree shriveled up in the sun, I was afraid to go near it. I thought if I did, I would really die. When Raymond told me that we would be going home for lunch in about half an hour, I rested for a few minutes, picked up my hoe, and went back to hoeing with the rest of them. After eating lunch, I felt much better, and when we went back to the field, the sun didn't seem very hot. After a couple of days and didn't anybody die, my dream began to fade. Soon I even began to like the work. I'd pull off my shoes and let the hot earth fall over my feet as I was hoeing. It sent a warm feeling over my whole body. Even the burning of the hot sun no longer frightened me, but seemed to give me energy. Then, when I went home, there were those good hot meals Mama made. During the first few days of chopping cotton, we ate better than we had in our whole life. Mama was doing everything she could to keep us going. That first day, she made a feast. She cooked at least 5 chickens, 2 big pones of bread, lots of rice and string beans, and even a couple of big coconut cakes. When we came in from the field, we found the picnic table out under the pecan tree loaded down with food. I had never seen Raymond so happy as when he was sitting up at that table running over with food, surrounded by all his workers, laughing and eating and listening to Mama's nasty jokes. While we sat at the table, we didn't even think about the field. And when we went back, we felt like we were just beginning the day. It went on like that for days, until all the money was gone from the little loan Raymond had made from the bank. After that, we went back to our usual beans and bread. Finally, we finished chopping the cotton for Raymond. Then Alberta, Darlene, and I took our hoes and went to chop cotton at $2 a day for big-time farmers in the area, including some who were Raymond's relatives. They were among the few Negroes who had worked over the years to build up successful farms. When it came time to scrape the cotton a couple of weeks later, we returned to our field. We had to remove the weeds that had grown up among the cotton stalks. Then the cotton could grow freely until picking time. In addition to the cotton for market, Raymond planted corn and potatoes for our own use. Within a couple of months, I could really handle a hoe. When I wasn't chopping or scraping cotton, I was chopping corn or helping Mama in the garden. I had learned a lot about farming, but the more I learned, the surer I was that I would never become a farmer. I couldn't see myself becoming totally dependent upon the rain, sun, and earth like most farmers. I used to look at Raymond and Mama running around the house praying all the time and think that they were crazy. Farming was a fever they couldn't get rid of.
When they first planted the cotton, they prayed for rain. Once the cotton came up, they didn't need rain anymore, so they prayed for sun, so the cotton balls would open. Then, after the balls opened, they worried about the boll weevils and spent a lot of money on poison to kill them. When the poison didn't work, they started praying again. It was always something. Mama and Raymond had been hooked to the soil since they were children, and I got the feeling, especially from Mama, that they were now trying to hook me. Sometimes I'd help Mama hoe in the garden, and she'd be telling me how she used to pick so much cotton and how she used to do this and used to do that. Then she'd be pity-patting around in the soil, barefooted, bragging about her collard greens and how, oh, Mother Nature took care of things. Look at these mustard greens here. Golly, wasn't nothing but a seed a few weeks ago. Now they ready to eat. She would kick her foot into the soil and say, boy, you can put any kind of seed in this garden, for you know it, you got something to eat. I saw how happy she was in her garden, and most of what she said was true. She did have the most beautiful garden I'd ever seen. The whole thing fascinated me, planting seeds, growing your own food, using the rain and the sun and the earth, and even the idea of making a living from it. But it was the hardest way I knew of making a living.